And welcome to Raw Talk here on M88. I am your host, Yo. Thanks so much for joining us again tonight as we present a show that's here to challenge you, encourage you, and most of all, get you to think. Let me just start off this evening, first of all, to say Aisha Wood's in concert right now. She's at Calvary of Albuquerque, 4001 Osuna Road Northeast. Free concert outdoors, beautiful evening for that. So if you're more interested in listening to some music, we got that going on right now. She just started about 20 minutes ago. And she'll be playing until about 7:30. And also want to thank everyone who came out for the M88 volleyball tournament yesterday. That was a big blessing. And again, I have to say, I was kind of astounded. There's some people who come out every year, these kids who play on my team for about the past 4 or 5 years. And every year they get bigger, which, you know, shouldn't be a surprise. But there are some this year where I knew I recognized them, but they look so different. And I got all choked up. They're all growing up so quickly. It's just so beautiful to see. But we had a good time. So thank you, everyone, for coming out and joining us for the volleyball tournament. That was a big blessing for us. We love just hanging out with you guys and getting to know you face to face. Well, tonight on Raw Talk, we're going to talk about a topic that I hope will get you thinking about some important issues and hopefully open your eyes also to the world around you. Sometimes we as Christians can get so inoculated in our Christian bubble that we forget to open our eyes to what's going on in the world. And perhaps tonight will be an eye-opening experience for you. My special guest this evening is Jeremy Reynolds from Joy Junction. He's the founder and executive director. He's also an author. He's been on TV, and he has a lot of personal experience when it comes to homelessness. So, Jeremy Reynolds, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hey, it's good to be on M88. In fact, the last time I believe I was on M88 was some years ago. And then before that, of course, it was when it was K-Lite back many, many years
ago. That was a long time ago, yeah.
So I'm sort of dating myself here. Oh.
Not at all. Well, Jeremy, to kick things off, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself, your background, a little bit about your story. You know, I've heard bits and pieces of it here and there, and I know you've written a book about it as well. Mm-hmm. And so just tell them a little bit about who you are, just so they can get familiar with you before we dive into specifics on this topic of homelessness.
Well, you know what I like to tell folks, you know, is many times I get asked, oh, tell me where you're from. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I like to tell people with an absolutely straight face, I'm from Texas. And they go, you're kidding. I go, yeah, I am.
That's a good one.
Yes, I'm from England originally. And, of course, I have that sort of annoying trait, I guess, because people can't really make out where I'm from because they think, well, he doesn't sound like he's from Albuquerque. Maybe he's from New England. Maybe he's from Boston, Philly. But is he? So the answer is I'm from jolly old England. And I came over from the UK to the US in 1978 when I was 20. With $50 in my pocket and a one-way ticket, I gave my life to the Lord in January of 1976 and had a calling, I believe, the Lord placed on my life to minister, but didn't really know what that meant. And so you can just think of this, you know, that back then I got saved and my folks were good folks, you know, my mom and dad, but of course in England when I got saved, my mother was horrified because firstly I gave myself to the Lord, my life to the Lord, which is a step down the English social class ladder. Then of course I made the cardinal sin mistake in her eyes of coming over to the colonies. You know, and that was like a really doubly big mistake. And she sort of said, you know, you've made your bed, you can lie in it. But, you know, she did the best she knew with what she could. And I believe before she died also, she gave her life over to the Lord also. I wanted to minister, okay, but, you know, sometimes when the Lord calls, in between the time he calls and in between the time he actually wants you to do it, there sometimes can be a training period. Well, of course, I'm stubborn, headstrong. Ask everybody who knows me and loves me and those who know me but don't love me, you know, and they'll go, okay, he wants to do what he wants to do. So I made up my mind I was going to be in full-time ministry. This was back on the East Coast. I came to Orlando when I first came over to the States. And I ended up being without a home. And it was interesting because at the time I felt, again, I had a calling on my life to minister. And some of our listeners may sort of relate to this, especially if they have a calling and maybe their mom or dad are going, uh-uh, you know. And so I remember asking the Lord back then, you know what, Lord, about funding my ministry. And I believe the Lord told me in that still small voice, he said, you know what, yes, son, it's your ministry. You fund it, you anoint it, you take care of it, it's your ministry, and when you're ready to give it back over to me, then I'll bless it. Sort of scary, but I didn't pay any attention. So at the end of January 1976, My ex-wife and kids were taken care of, you know, in Florida by some good friends who said, I'll take care of them, but let Jeremy take care of himself when he comes to his senses, if, I think they really thought, if he comes to his senses. And so, you know, at the end of January 1976, now picture this also, yo. I was brought up in upper middle class English. I went away to a good school. And I really had everything I needed given to me. I mean, as long as I did my thing, it was handed to me. And I didn't have to worry about where the next meal came from, if I had a roof over my head. But so at the end of 1976, I was on the border, or rather the end of January 1976, I was on the border of Texas in this strange state I never heard of in my life before, never dreaming I would spend so many years of my life here. I saw all these yellow tags flashing by on the highway, and the state was, of course, New Mexico. And it was cold. It was at the end of January. I had hitchhiked. I was on the way to stay with some friends in Arizona. I had like a name and some people that said, if you ever have a need, we'll help you out. But I only had enough money to get halfway from Orlando to Arizona. So consequently, I ended up in Texas and Arizona. All right, I ended up in Texas and New Mexico on the border. And it was scary. You know what, Joe? Because the wind was hard. It was a chill. And you know what? There is nothing worse than having maybe $12 in your pocket and seeing a sign across the road that said ABC Motel, like $18. Because you know you have a few bucks in your pocket and you know a room is so close and yet so far. And I was desperate. So that night, and it's in my book also, I spent the night in a little corrugated iron shack on the border. And I was freezing. Prior to that point, a few hours earlier that night, I had also tried to, like, sleep on the curb, sleep on, like, a grass bank, roll myself in some newsprint also. I was getting up and laying down and getting up and laying down and getting up and laying down. I spent a few hours that night, yo, on a fiberglass mattress. And that is not a good way to spend the night. And I was desperate. I thought, man, have I blown it? I've let down everybody. Maybe I should go back to England, but maybe I shouldn't, because I thought then everybody in my old church in England will laugh at me. I was totally humiliated. But you know what? The Lord sometimes has a way. He says, he doesn't place us in these times, but he says, if you're going to do this, then I'm going to use this to train you. So that was my experience, you know, being homeless. And I remember also, but prior to that, of course, you know, in Florida, we had stayed with some friends. So even though we were homeless, we had a place to stay, but no home. But I also remember just being out there that day, and I had called a church prior to staying in that shack for that night. And, you know, the church answers, you know, the priest, the father, the priest, rabbi, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Go, hey, I'm homeless. I don't have a place to stay. So this nice guy says, well, look, you can sleep, like, on a parish hall floor. I said, oh, cool. Well, oh, good, because I was very much more English then, you know. And I said, how far are you? And he says, 5 miles. And at that point in time, absolute despair overwhelmed me, because I thought, you know what, you know, 5 miles to me might as well have been 50 or 500. I was desperate. I was cold. I was tired. I was totally without any hope whatsoever. I didn't know a single soul, and I was on the street. So that was my experience of being homeless on the street. And so the next day I woke up, didn't have any food. I was still hungry, getting really smelly, I'm sure, also at that point. And I was doing my thumb thing on the road, and, you know, this kind truck driver stopped a few hours later. You know, I got splattered, I'm sure, with dust, mud, dirt. You know, you have mouthfuls of dirt. You have a meal, but not of bread, but it's of dirt. Mm-hmm. And this truck driver stops, and he goes, where would you like to go? I'm like, he says, are you going east or west? I go, I don't care, man. I'm just going east or west. He goes, where do you want to go? I said, well, east really. But at this point, I was so desperate. He could have said east, north, west, or south, you know, whatever. And I don't think people realize, you know, that when you're homeless, as I was at that time, you have a despair that sets in. You just don't care, because you feel like everybody's looking at you. You feel like you're a sore sight, or a sight for sore eyes. Again, we discussed briefly also before the show, digressing for me for a minute. One of the things we get talked to about a lot is myself and my colleague are out on the road, and we go around to various meetings in town. We have people come up to us. Like, I was in a Bible bookstore the other day, and a guy in there, you know, talked to us. He said, well, we've seen this guy go up and down in front of our store for years. It's obvious he wants to be homeless. So I looked at him and said, really? I mean, to me, it was no more obvious he wanted to be homeless than I wanted to be homeless. I made a series of bad choices. But I looked at this guy and I went, you know what? The issue isn't, does he or does he not want to be homeless? He may be making choices that have caused him to be homeless, but why is he making those choices? And it's so easier for us to look at people and go, well, look, man, we saw Yo out on the set, dude, Yo out on the street last night, man. You know, he's real scroungy. I've seen that Yo dude on the street for like years. And people go, well, it's obvious, you know, we offered him a job, he didn't take it. We offered him the chance to work for a meal, but he didn't take it. We said, come to our house and we'll help you and we'll ask you to clean up and do this and that. He didn't take it. And so then you get written off. But the issue is what we try to do in our ministry is we try to say, okay, why is Yo coming back with those responses? What is there about Yo, Jeremy, whoever, that makes him respond in that fashion? And then, of course, that is why we've arrived at the state we are. We're trying not just to say, well, if Yo doesn't behave like a good conservative evangelical, if he doesn't make all the wrong, if he doesn't say all the right things, if he doesn't speak our lingo, our jargon, and obviously wants to be homeless. No, we want to know that Yo and Jeremy are people that God has made in his own image. We have souls, we have bodies, we have spirits. God loves us very much. But sometimes the Lord's people don't love us as much as he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's part of why I wanted to have you come on tonight's show, just to, as a reminder, you know, to reopen our eyes to the need of other people around us. That, let's be honest, right? And I'll be honest as well. Sometimes those who are less fortunate are invisible. You try not to notice because it makes you uncomfortable.
They are faceless.
Right. And we, you know, don't want to deal with that problem. There is this book that I read, A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and there is this field called the Somebody Else's Problem Field. And when you use that, it was like it turned you invisible because everyone else is thinking it's somebody else's problem, so therefore nobody sees you. And when I read that, I was like, you know, there's a lot of things that we do in reality that's like that. We just like, somebody else's problem, zoom, problem gone. You know, we don't see it anymore. And
yep. And
part of the reason I wanted to have you on tonight's show is not to make people feel guilty or anything
absolutely not.
But to remind us about our duty as Christians to show compassion to people in need and you know, to break some of the stereotypes of homelessness as well. If you have questions for Jeremy, this is a great opportunity to get those questions answered. Maybe you've been wondering, you know, how do people become homeless? Why do they become homeless? How can I minister to homeless people? Any question that might occur to you, give us a call, 505-338-5790. This is a great opportunity to ask those questions you've been afraid to ask, but have always wanted to know what the answers are.
Everything you always want to know about homelessness,
that's right.
You're afraid to ask.
Yeah, so ask it tonight, and don't be afraid about that. 505-338-5790. Now, Jeremy, let's talk a little bit about some of these misconceptions about homelessness. You know, a lot of people, most people's encounter with homeless may be the guy on the corner who has the sign.
The sign.
Right. You know, the sign guy or whatever it may be. And, you know, the immediate preconception is they just want some booze.
He's a bum.
Right. And that's about as far as most people go, so far as their thoughts go as to what is a homeless person. But that's not just the case. You know, I was looking at some statistics. Well, I didn't do it. Actually, my researcher Sorrell did it. I'd like to say that I know all this
stuff. Yeah, but it
sounds
good.
Yeah, it does sound good, but I can't take credit when the credit is mine. And, you know, granted, there's a large percentage of homeless people who do have substance problems or alcohol problems, but that's not all of them. In fact, much of the research that we found, you know, the highest number was maybe 50%. That leaves like a whole nother half that have no problems with alcohol or substance abuse.
But you see, you know, you're
still homeless.
Let's address that first issue
first.
You also have to get back to the point. You said, okay, there are a large number of people that have drug abuse issues, alcohol abuse issues. Okay. But let's not write them off either because, okay, it's so easy to say, okay, Yo's on the street, you know, a favorite street corner, highway corner for panhandling is Louisiana on I-40. There's also a steakery that's close to there that we've got hit up outside there in the lot. All right, so let's take those people that have substance abuse issues. The issue isn't the substance abuse issues. The issue is that is a manifestation of the issue. Why do they have substance abuse issues? And so the easy way to do, I mean, you've addressed it halfway already, is to say either to ignore them or to say in our best conservative lingo, well, it's obvious they don't want to get back on the feeding. And they're just bums, yeah, you know, and pound our righteous fist indignantly, because that gets us off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But the issue is, why do they have substance abuse issues? There's a wonderful story. I interviewed one of our staff members a few weeks ago. It's on our website. It's also on the assistnews.net website also. And it's called something like Prayer, a Listening Ear, and Joy Junction, Good Help for the Homeless. This deals with a young lady that came to us 2 years ago. Her name is Lisa. And you know, Yo, how much she was drinking. She was drinking, if I get the story right, when she came to us, about half a gallon of vodka. Not a month, not a week, but a day.
Wow.
She mixed it, Yo, with everything. And you know what? Before she came to us, she was living under a trailer in the North Valley outside a restaurant. It would be easy for people, and she said people like mocked her, laughed at her. The restaurant owner allowed her to live there, but she said some of the clients were like, eh, you know, they wrinkled their nose up at her. It's like, what's that chick doing under the truck? Or, yeah, mm-hmm, thingy, you know, trailer mm-hmm thingy, mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And it was a time in the North Valley 2 years ago. I guess there was like a lot of rain. And so I guess what happened was the tractor trailer rig axle, rod, wheel moved and it fell on her and some portion of her body was crushed or broken, leg, foot, you know, whatever. Well, she came to us and she was very angry. In fact, she threw like a plate or tray at one of our staff members back then. And so one of our other staff members looked at her and said, you know what, Lisa, you need some help. You need to join our life recovery program. And now the miracle about this is it would be easy to write her off. But what we did is we said, you know what, Lisa, you need to join a life recovery program. She came to know Jesus Christ. She asked him into her life. And now she helps to teach classes and she shares about Jesus to give to others the same hope that she got. She'd had some horrible issues occur in her life. She had relationships that were bad, you know, were totally messed up. And it's easy to look at the outward to say, you know what, Jeremy, they just like stink. Why don't they get a job crying in a bucket? Well, all right, folks, let's take this. You see the drunk on the highway and you see the sign. Maybe they do want, you know, just money for booze. But again, the issue is, why do they want money for booze? You know what, yo, it takes hard work to panhandle. It's not an easy life. Admittedly, you don't have a boss saying clock in at 8 and clock out at 5. You don't punch a time clock.
Right.
But you know what? You're out there in the rain. You're out there in the elements.
So Sun here in New Mexico.
Absolutely. What we're trying to do is to say, you know what? Whatever the issue is, whatever the issue is that has caused you to turn to drugs, alcohol, sex, porn, whoever, whatever. The thing is that Jesus Christ has an answer for that. You don't have to seek your solace in drugs, booze, meth, crack, whatever. You can turn it over to Jesus, ask him for help, ask his people for help, ask our staff for help. If you honestly make a sincere effort to turn your life over to the Lord, he will answer the prayer. Because you know what, you know, the word says, and you know that and I know that, when we seek him even minimally, we seek him with just like a small percent of effort, and he will reach out back to us so much more than we reached out to him. But what we advise folks to do when they see a panhandler, firstly, if you have the chance, don't put yourself in danger, because there was something awful happened last week. In fact, your panhandler was killed on the street. You may have seen that in the news.
Wow.
And this lady's husband was staying with us. And so we were able to minister to him last night also. And he is, and I ask everybody out there listening, you know, to pray for him too. What we ask folks to do, folks, if you have a chance and you see a panhandler and you feel okay about stopping, if you don't feel okay, don't. First, folks, do not give them money unless the Holy Spirit specifically directs you to do that. Right? Do not give them money. But, folks, love them. Maybe even touch them. Because you know what? You know, so many of these folks are aching for touch. I mean, you and me, we get that all the time. We get a handshake. We get a hug. We take a touch for granted. But if you're smelly, if you're dirty, and you're going to get, all of us get real smelly and real dirty if we have a bath. And how do you have a bath out on the street?
Right.
So, folks, maybe a hug or a touch, or maybe take him down to a fast food place. Maybe give him a food coupon. Or if you don't want to do any of that, folks, take our number, 1-800-924-0569, 1-800-924-0569. That phone is answered all day and all night, and say, you know what, I saw Yo and his wife and 8 kids, you know, on the street at Louisiana and 40, and can you go and check him out?
Hmm. That's good. And I want to talk more about some of the stuff that we can do. Right now we have MB on the line. Welcome to Raw Talk, MB, and what do you have to say?
No, I just tuned in, and I heard you and what you're doing, you know, for the homeless.
Uh-huh.
I'm not out of Albuquerque. I live in Española, but I do go to Albuquerque quite a bit, and I see, you know, the homeless population a lot more than we do see down here, probably because of it's such a bigger area. And I take off my hat to you and for what you're doing. And
thank you.
And Jeremy Reynolds also, because I know he's been doing that for years, and I'm sure he's a man of God, and so are you, and being led by the Spirit and helping these people. I think we have a mixture of people. What I've been able to observe is we have some people that, for whatever reason, they find themselves in that situation, and they fall into a hole, and they can't crawl out, and then maybe just others that, you know, just choose to be like that. What I've experienced there in the homelessness, you know, I've been led by the Spirit to help out some. There was one there at McDonald's one day in Coors, and he was outside with his dog, and I offered him to buy him a meal, and he was real honest about it. He said, well, I already had a meal, thank you. But I looked at his eyes, and he had a real bad eye infection in both eyes. He could barely open his eyes, and he was trying to clean his eyes and look at me. I could tell, like I said, he had a real bad eye infection from his living conditions. And it really touched my heart because I offered him, $3-4 that I had. And he just didn't, like, just grab him from my hand. I had to actually put him in his hand, and I knew he wasn't out just to get what he was to get him. But I could really see that he was in a situation for whatever reason, things happened in his life. And it really, I was really able to discern a lot in his situation, and I can never forget it. And even till this day, I can repeat everything the way it happened. And it really touched my heart because some of these individuals are there because, you know, for whatever reason, life has, you know, thrown them a curve or whatever, divorce or, different things. And they find themselves in that situation. And like I said, I take my hat off to you because a lot of people, and I've heard, and I can literally say it because, you know, I'm an American, and I've heard that the mayor there in Albuquerque is not very, keen or whatever with the homeless situation. They'd rather put them away to where they don't see them. But, you know, the scripture clearly, Jesus clearly said that we would always have them with us, among us, you know, and it's our duty to look after them, and if we can, and if we can give them a hand, because, you know, what the Lord has always spoke to me, but for you, Lord, there goes I.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's always, when I see someone, of course I discern, and I ask the Spirit to help me discern, but there goes I. If not for the grace of God, there goes I. Anyway, like I said, I've experienced quite a few other ones, because we used to go to a ministry up there almost every weekend and go fellowship up there. And I would see, like I said, the homeless always would really touch my heart, because I would see the same ones. There was another one named Cordova that, you know, he probably seen him there dragging a blanket all over. And we had a little mission church right there on the Five Points, and I invited him and said, come in. And he said, I can't come in. He said, I'm smelly. Look how I look. And I said, you know what? I said, I was an usher, and I said, you know what? The Lord don't care about that. I said, if they throw you out, they're going to throw me out as well. I said, and I went in, and he did smell bad. I'm not going to say he didn't. He did smell bad, but that's how I figured that's the way my sin smelled to God when I came to God, you know. And it wasn't for me to judge him or whatever, just show him the love of the Lord. And it came to me that he had had some bad experiences with ministries, you know, in California. He opened up to me, and he didn't really want nothing to do with that to show him the love of the Lord. And you know, you could tell he was a very, very attractive man, but through his situation, he had fallen into the situation that he was, you know. And it really touched my heart to see, you know, the type of individuals that fall into that hole and they can't get out. And, you know, it really takes a lot. It takes a big man like yourself, like I said, and Jeremy Reynolds, and I'm sure there's many others out there that even the general public that reaches out to them, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really, like you said, for what you did to the least of my brethren, the word says, you did it unto me. So, like I said, a lot of people say, well, they don't want to work, this and that, the other. They don't know their situation, really, you know, and it's God who, you know, he will not withhold any good thing from his people if we reach out to them. And I with that, I want to end it, and I thank you again for it. I just happened to tune in, And it really touched me, and I said, I got to reach this out because I know the Lord wanted for me to share this with you.
Well, thanks, MB. We certainly appreciate you sharing those thoughts, man. That's a big encouragement, I know, for me, and I'm sure for a lot of our listeners. You have a great evening, all right?
Thanks, Jambi.
All right. You're listening to Raw Talk. We're talking about homelessness with our special guest, Jeremy Reynolds, and trying to take a look at it from a Christian perspective, not just, what is it, but what can we do about it? How can we share the compassion of Christ? And we have on the line with us Elizabeth. Elizabeth, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Hi. Thanks for letting me be on the show.
Sure.
I just had a question for you, Jeremy.
Hey, Elizabeth. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Hey, I've worked with homeless across the country and a little bit here up in Santa Fe now, too. And I've worked with the underprivileged as well, people who aren't homeless but have low-income housing and such. And I've come across that people will accept the help and they'll go with it for a little while and we'll try and get them back on their feet if they seem to want it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll work with them, you know, and then all of a sudden they, like, just turn their backs and turn away from what we're doing and end up getting worse rather than better. And I feel like I'm enabling them. And I guess I struggled a lot recently just trying to reach out to the homeless and to the underprivileged just because I keep feeling like I'm being used. Does that make sense?
But it does, you know what, Elizabeth, but you know what, the Lord doesn't tell us to take care of the results. He tells us to plant the seed. So the responsibility that we have is just to love them in the name of the Lord, to give somebody a meal, to give them some food. And as I shared earlier with Yo, maybe even to give them some touch and just to say, you know what, if you're hungry, I'll buy you a meal. If you're thirsty, I'll give you some water, you know, Coke, tea, you know, whatever. And just to make sure that somebody knows that they care. Or rather, that they know that you care for them. Because it's a terrible feeling. Like you heard me share, when I was on the streets so many years ago, even though it wasn't for a long time, I just had the feeling that nobody cared in the entire world. And I just can't imagine that some of the hurts that myself and my colleagues who work with me, we heard terrible, terrible stories that I have to tell you some of them, Elizabeth. Your hair would stand on end. Some of these folks have been through stories of abuse, and the issues that cause them to get down where they are, I mean, are just horrifying. So don't feel you're being used, but every time you give a gift, a meal, some love, some smile, a hug, just say under your breath, you know what, Jesus, if I'm being used, it's you that are using me.
Mm. And you know, it's kind of interesting that you brought this up, Elizabeth, because just this morning while we're at church, our pastor was sharing how she just recently came back from Israel, and while she's there, she's talking about how Jews by nature have a very giving nature, and there's this woman that she was flying back to New York with, but before they did, this woman had to go meet a friend of hers. Now, this friend of hers had a gambling problem. Gambled and couldn't get past it and was always getting into financial problems because of this gambling problem. And yet, this elderly woman, she's about 79 or so, was going to meet her friend to give her money. And our pastor asked her, why would you do that if you know she's struggling with gambling and she's probably just going to gamble it away? And the woman looked very perplexed that our pastor would even ask such a question. She said, because you always have to have hope that by offering them help, it'll eventually get them to turn their life around. And, you know, what a fascinating outlook on it that,
you know,
if I'm persistent and I'm consistent, and yeah, they might use it for destructive tendencies, but you always have to have the hope that if you're willing to reach out, sooner or later, they're going to get it and they're going to want to turn their life around. And that was very encouraging for me to hear, especially like you're saying, because sometimes it seems like no matter what you do, they just want to continue doing the wrong thing.
Well, I think also, Elizabeth, if we can compare it to God's love for us in Jesus before we were saved, you know, God reached out to us in various ways through friends, through ministers, through ministries, and we made like a half-hearted attempt to come to him, and then we didn't, and then we did, and then we went back. And so sometimes we have to remember, think of all the various issues, or rather think of what of all the times that God tried to intervene in our life and we said, I don't think so, you know. And so what I've also discovered, Elizabeth, is that I've never yet tried to sometimes, you know, I get approached with a need, you know, at our ministry, and I'll be having a bad day, you know, there'll be issues that just can confront me in my life, issues about the office and so on. I just feel, you know, I don't feel like doing, you know, the service tonight, the study tonight, and then we'll teach and preach, and after that there'll be needs, and I'll end the service or the study, and even though hopefully we will bless the people to whom we minister, their laughter and their love and their smile will bless us more than we bless them.
Does that help you out at all, Elizabeth?
Yeah, Yeah, it does. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, and you know, continue doing good, because that's one of the things that we're exhorted to do in the Bible. So I applaud you for maintaining those efforts.
And continue listening to Raw Talk and Yo also.
Thanks for joining us tonight, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
All right. And if you have a question that you'd like to ask Jeremy, like I said, this is a unique opportunity. Maybe you've always had questions about homelessness that you either didn't know who to ask, or maybe you were afraid to ask. This is an opportunity to do that. Get those questions answered. Satisfy your curiosity so that you can get past the curious stage and into a stage where you actually take action. Give us a call, 505-338-5790. That's 505-338-5790. Now, Jeremy, you can help me out with this. We came across some statistics for here in Albuquerque, and these were actually from 2004. From the Department of Housing and Urban Renewal, about 1,600 individuals and 880 members and families are homeless in this city on any given night. And according to their study, their survey, which I guess it's hard to do a survey of homeless because, you know, where are you going to find them? 5,000 to 6,000 persons in Albuquerque will be homeless over the course of a year. And about 10% of those are just stranded on their way to some other location, similar to your
situation. It's very interesting also, because one of the difficulties that you have in doing surveys about the homeless is nobody can agree. Obviously, you know, the first thing you have to do when you survey how many homeless people are there are. We have to decide how do you define a homeless person, right?
Right.
Because otherwise, if you define it one way and I define it another, we have a problem,
yes.
Houston. You know, we have and so what happens is it's very difficult because obviously there are some people that are homeless that stay at the Downtown Missions, that stay at JJ, as we call our ministry. Mm-hmm. And there are some people that stay in the motels. There's some people that stay with their mother-in-law, their in-laws, their outlaws, and so on. But how do you define somebody? Like, say you and your wife, you know, were homeless, but you're staying with her parents. You may be homeless for a week or a month, but who's going to know about it outside your immediate family? Mm-hmm. But technically speaking, you're homeless. So how do you define homeless? I mean, I think the analyses of the number of homeless folks in Albuquerque runs on the low side between 1,500 to a high earth side between 5,000. And so I wouldn't argue with those at all, you know, those figures. But it's real hard to say who is
right.
homeless and who isn't. You know, and of course, in addition to those that have abuse issues, there are those that have the mental health issues,
right.
You know, the abuse issues. And sometimes when you just get so down, you get terribly, terribly depressed, and you're wondering, well, is there any point in going on? I think what we also as believers do, sometimes, you know, it's like we go to the bank and we want money. We go through the drive-in. We want, like, quick money. If we wait for more than 5 minutes in the drive-in, we have a fit. If we go to the fast food place, we want our hamburger not in 5 minutes, we want it now. We want our meal now. I know because I do. I'm sure Yo does too also, right? Right?
On occasion.
Yes, on occasion. And so it's like the same with the homeless. We want a quick fix. We want people to conform to our expectations. So what happens is, you know, say, I hope you don't mind keeping on using you as an example.
No, I'm here. I'm available. Go ahead.
Yes, all right. He's just like looking at me, folks, but he does control the controls. Well, I guess he does. You know, the producer does also, right?
Good job, Madrid.
Yes, And so what happens is, just like Lisa, the staff member I referred to earlier, who came to us drinking half a gallon of vodka a day, just like she didn't get into her issues overnight, there is no quick fix for dealing with people. Sometimes we want to say, well, look, I've given this Yo dude and his wife and kids, I've given them a meal or two or three. I've given them a place to stay. What else do they want? But you know what? Have we dealt with the deep down emotional scars and hurts that caused you to be homeless in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why do we expect people to be grateful for us giving them charity? We shouldn't be reaching down to people. We should be reaching across the table to them with the love of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Fair?
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. We have Chris on the line. Chris, welcome to Raw Talk, and what do you have to say?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just tuned in, so I don't know if this has been asked yet. I work for a local ambulance service, and I deal a lot with the homeless. I'm also a Christian, and I participated a little bit at a local, it might have been closed already, but a local park where a large mass of homeless people are fed every Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm all for helping people. I had an uncle that had just died, who was mentally ill, and without support of his family, he would have ended up on the streets. And so I definitely see a need to work to homeless people. But this particular ministry, yes, they fed, but the message that was preached was basically, if they say the sinner's prayer, then these people are our brethren. I think 1 John clearly shows that the children, or it says the children of God and the children of the devil are obvious. It calls for accountability. It calls for, here's the evidences of a Christian. I mean, when Jesus was asked in Luke, why are few being saved, the question, he said, strive to enter the kingdom of heaven, few will find the road. That's narrow. So how do we keep, my question is, how do we at the same time help these people, but at the same time keep accountability? And I mean, I'm kind of confused on this issue. I've talked about this issue with several people just in my profession. I mean, at what point do you say if you don't eat, if you don't work, you don't eat? So how do we keep accountability, but at the same time help these people and reach out to them?
That's a very good question, Chris. Jeremy, what would you say the answer is? I mean, and it's a valid point. Where do you draw the line and say, we've tried to help you, at some point you are responsible for taking some action as well?
Well, I think probably Chris, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think probably Chris. Firstly, we have to recognize that probably in that case, maybe it's not our place, you know, to judge, because, you know, as a society, as, you know, a culture, we just can't tell somebody, you know what, if you don't work, you don't eat. I mean, I think that's like an encouragement for us to say, you know what, it's an encouragement for us to say to a family, like say the famous Yo again, who's married with his kids, who doesn't take care of his family, then somebody, if he attends a church, somebody should come up to you, or me in this case, to say, you know what, Yo, it is your responsibility to provide for the needs of your family, you know, your wife and your kids. But honestly, Chris, do you think that we can have people on the streets of Albuquerque, not only, you know, as as a town, you know, as a city, but as Christians, and to say, Chris, we're just like going to let you starve on the streets of Albuquerque? I mean, do you think it's realistic for us to do that?
Well, no, I don't. If I could just put one comment to answer your question.
Sure.
You say, who are we to judge? But if I've been posed this question many times about my non-Christian family. Would they say, well, who are you to judge? Because I, you know, a homeless person on the corner, you know, I won't give money to, asking for money. They say, well, who are you to judge? Well, when they have a sign on the corner, isn't that basically, without asking me, don't I have to discern? Should I give money to this person? So isn't there an amount of discerning and judgment that we have to use when we help the homeless?
Yeah, there is, Chris. And what I meant specifically was, when I said we shouldn't judge, what I meant was, it's specifically relating to the issue of food.
Yes.
I mean, we just can't say, you know what, Chris, Yo, and Jeremy, excuse me, they choose not to work, we're going to let them solve on the street. And I think if you listen to the beginning of the show, Chris, what we're trying to do at JJ is to get past this, okay, Chris won't work, or Yo won't work, or Jeremy won't work, therefore we're going to let them starve. We're trying to take it, Chris, and maybe this be something for you to pray about as well. We're trying to take it one step back and to say, all right, what is there about Chris? What issues has he encountered? Maybe what abuse has happened to him? What emotional issues has he encountered? What has affected his life that makes him think in this fashion? Because you know what, Chris? Nobody, there is not a single soul that wants to live on the street. And if they do, it is because something has happened to them that makes it easier to live on the street. But what we try and do at JJ is to get past that, to say, you know what? Try and open up. We try to get past that hard shell that makes them not want to answer anything or not want to open up, and to say, what's going on with you, Chris, Jeremy, and Yo, that you choose to live in this fashion? And usually what we're able to do, you know, with the Lord's help and discernment, as you said, when somebody trusts us, it's an easy fix, Chris, you know, for us as Christians to say, well, you know what? I tried to help that Chris dude, you know, for like weeks, and I gave him a job, and, well, you know what, man, the dude just blew it. I mean, that really is, you know, all respect to you, Chris, that's just like an easy fix, because that takes the responsibility off us. What is harder for us to do is to get with Chris, to make friends with you, to form a relationship with you, even when you blow it, and to say, you know what, Chris, I don't like necessarily the way you're responding, but I do want to help you, and I need you to trust me. I want to trust you. So I just want to help you get past those issues that are resulting in you living in the street. Does any of this make any sense, Chris?
Oh, no, definitely. You know, I guess the balance is the fruit of, I don't know a lot about your ministry, but the fruit of it, is somebody not just making a profession, but is there change lives? Because I think that that the main reason why people don't want to come to Jesus is simply because, not because they were had, because they're haters of God, as Romans 3 says, because they rebel against God. So I think the simple question is, in a ministry, is there fruit? Is people being changed? Is their lives being changed? Not just professions. And
well, you know what, Chris? I would love you one day, if you have time, you know, to come down to our ministry, to call our number at 877-6967 to get a tour of our ministry. Because you know what, Chris? The exciting thing is about giving the studies and the sermons, again, with my colleague, you know, JJ, is the fact that every day, every week, every day, we are seeing changed lives. We're seeing people coming to know Jesus. We have a six-month life recovery program. And that, Chris, is so exciting because people are getting hope. They're realizing they don't have to do the meth thing, do the crack thing, do the booze thing, do the porno thing, you know, that they can cast all of their cares upon Jesus. We are seeing people get saved. We're seeing them discipled. We're seeing them stay changed, stay saved, and we're seeing them become productive members of our community here in Albuquerque. And Chris, that is more exciting, as I think you would attest, than anything else in the entire world.
And also, Chris, you know, I recently have started gardening because we have a yard now. I'm very excited about that.
Wow.
And one of the things I've noticed about trying to grow plants, sometimes it takes a long time before you see any fruit to your labor. And sometimes, you know, it's gotten hot recently and the plants look like they're going to die. So sometimes you have to start over. And, but the issue is you continue doing it because you do want to see that fruit, but it doesn't always come very quickly. Chris, we have a lot of people hanging on the line, so we're going to move on. But thank you so much for calling.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your comments.
Okay.
Moving on to John. John, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
I just had a quick question.
Sure.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, man.
I'm doing awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
anyway,
you're on Raw Talk with Yo. Yeah. Yo.
But I've run into a lot of homeless people lately, and my question pretty much is, like, I used to just kind of give them a couple dollars and be like, peace, and just leave. But lately, God kind of put it on my heart, and I've been praying for them a lot.
Awesome. That is great. That's great. John, right?
Yeah,
John, that really is awesome. I mean, I encourage you to keep on doing that. Maybe go like to a fast food place also. Maybe get, you know, some tickets like for a burger and fries or something. Something you can't exchange, you know. And then obviously if you feel led, if you have the time, also maybe figure trying to park your car in a safe place and just to say, hey, dude, you know what? I've just noticed you're here for the last hour, for the last day, or I go this way to work, to coffee, to church, to whatever, and it seems like you're here every day. Is there anything I can do for you? Can I pray with you, not just for you, but with you? And also, you can always, John, direct them to us. You can say, have you, and you can give them our number at 1-800-924-0569. Anytime, John, between like 5 in the morning and midnight, we will send our van out to check out to see whether a homeless person, man, woman, boy, or girl, needs a ride to a safe place to stay.
Now, John, did you have a question that you wanted to ask?
Yeah, well, like, sometimes I wonder if, like, the homeless people just, like, want me to pray for them because they know I'm going to give them money.
That's a good question, Jeremy. How would you respond?
Well, I would just pray and be completely discerning. You know, I always used to say, don't ever give homeless people money. And as a rule, I continue to say that. But I think the exception to that is if the Holy Spirit specifically directs you to give a guy, a woman, or a family money. As a rule, I would say no. If they need a ticket somewhere, buy them a ticket, you know, to go out of town. But, you know, as a rule, direct them to a homeless ministry that ministers the, you know, will teach them the word and will share with them about Jesus.
Does that help you out, John?
Yeah, it helped me out a lot, and I appreciate you guys' time.
Well, thank you for calling in, man. We certainly appreciate your question because I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about that. So thanks for calling in tonight.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right, next we have Daniel on the line. Daniel, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to make a quick comment.
Sure.
For the people that sometimes they say, I don't have any way to help the homeless, I don't have any time. One way to actually help them, I usually go to the dollar stores, and buy me a bunch of Bibles, because they're usually a dollar or something like that. And I carry them in my car. And also I buy a lot of water bottles, try to keep them cool. And while I'm in the traffic light or something, I just hand them a water bottle. And with it, I hand them a Bible. And I tell them, you know, meanwhile, you're waiting here in the corner here. You know, why don't you read the Bible? Start reading John. And many of them are actually been really glad that I'm actually handing them the Bibles. That's one way for people on the quote-unquote run to try to help and reach the homeless.
That's a great suggestion, Daniel. Thanks so much for sharing that. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, that is a great idea. That is a great idea. It really is. The only thing I would add to that is we have lots of requests, and maybe also you, some of your listeners can help out here too. Some of your listeners can help out here too. So many of the Bibles that we get given are of really small prints, and we thank God and we thank the donors that give us these, but many of our folks staying down there have eye issues. So folks, if you have any large print Bibles you can give to Joy Junction, give us a call. 1-800-924-0569. We are in desperate need, folks, of Tyndale Life Recovery Bibles, because they're very expensive, but they're wonderful, and also large print Bibles in general. Obviously, the Word works when the Word works, but in order for the Word to work, you have to read the Word.
Right.
And if you can't read
the
Word,
can't see it,
you can't get benefited by it.
Right.
But overall, I like what our friend here is doing, and that is a great idea.
Daniel, thanks so much for calling in with that great suggestion. We appreciate it. You have a great evening, all right?
Yeah, thank you, and God bless you.
All right,
God bless you too.
And Vicki is on the line next. Vicki, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Two speakers ago was talking about if a person won't work, don't let him eat.
Right.
Yes.
And I get a little concerned when we just put scripture aside and say, oh, well, but look at this other. This is my comment. I believe that scripture was directed to believers. They were living in a communal situation.
Mm-hmm.
They were believers, and supposedly, you know, they had all things in common to help each other, and I think that was very legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
If they weren't going to pull their weight. So I think that is very different from helping street people.
Vicki, you are a woman after my own heart. You know, I really thank you for calling in with that comment. That is a great comment, because you know what? You know, it's an easy out for us to say to somebody on the street, Vicki, as I'm sure you would agree with me here, it just gets us off the hook. Well, you know what? Vicki doesn't want to work, so bless God, we're not going to feed her. You know, that's an easy out, but I really thank you for that comment, Vicki. It makes a lot of sense.
Also, I'm wondering if at Joy Junction, I don't know if people have to listen to a preaching service before they eat. I've heard that discussed sometimes by secular people who are non-Christians who criticize that. I don't know what your practice is.
Well, you know what, Vicki? What we do is, because so many of our people stay on a long-term basis, we do require that people listen to a service, but it is after they eat. Because you know what, Vicki, it's always been my feeling. Sometimes, you know, I've been a believer since 1976, and I've listened to thousands of sermons. And sometimes, you know, you listen to these sermons, especially if it's late on a Sunday morning, and the guy's going on and on and on, and your stomach is growling.
Yes.
Right? And you're going, I just wish that guy would just get along with it, because I can almost smell internally, you know, the lunch cooking. And so, how can you hear, Vicki, about the love of God, or rather, how can you believe about the love of God when you're going, well, God loves me so much, why doesn't he give me a burger? So we give somebody a meal, then we say, you know what, now's time for the message.
I agree with that totally, and I'm glad to hear you present that, because it shows it isn't just an ulterior motive, that there's a true love for the people who are hungry, rather than just using it like a rod, so to speak, as though everybody's a disobedient child, which we are before God.
Absolutely.
But before men, I mean, people need dignity. And if they have a hungry tummy, I agree with you totally, Jeremy. I'm glad y'all do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just one other thing, one other comment. We don't hear too much discussed about the story of the Good Samaritan. And many people are battered and bruised, mm-hmm. Spiritually and a lot physically. And we have too many Pharisees going by. And you hear all kind of preaching addressing the Pharisee, addressing the Good Samaritan. And I shared this with a friend recently, and she said, you know, Vicki, I've never heard a sermon on the person who is all beat up by life.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there are people hurting badly, and it isn't necessarily physical. There are other people, the widows out there. I thought of this recently. As long as 2,000 years ago, There are specific scriptures about don't neglect the widows. But today, if people have a roof over their head and they do have food in their tummy, nobody worries about the loneliness or isolation, and seniors are not treated with dignity either. And Jesus treated everybody with dignity and love, and he rebuked the disciples when they got harsh with the people.
Well, I agree absolutely, Vicki. And one thing, you know, we didn't address yet, but Vicki brings up a great point, is, you know, in the 21 years I've been running Joy Junction, we have seen a huge increase in the amount of elderly people we see, and also mentally ill people. And I guess one thing that scares me also is, really, we're not officially allowed to take care of these folks because we're not an elder care home.
Mm.
You know, we're not nurses or doctors, but we can't leave them out on the streets. You know what the amazing thing is, Joe? About 4.5 years ago, we were sheltering about 150 people a night. Now is well over 300 people. We do not get any federal, state, county, city funding. We're not United Way members either. Everything we do is because of the kindness of the Lord and the goodness of the members of the body of Christ also.
Well, we got about 5-6 minutes left with the program. Man, the time
That's
just
all. I think
flew
we should
by.
Can the next hour. Just go until 9 o'clock, yo.
Oh, man, we have so much that we have yet to cover.
You can have me again.
Yeah, I think we'll have to do that, Jeremy. Vicki brought up some stuff that I wanted to get into that we haven't had a chance to. But real quickly, let's touch on Joy Junction. What's going on there now? What are some ways that people can get involved with Joy Junction? And then maybe just some practical advice. What can Christians do in practical ways? And we've touched on it a lot throughout the show, to see the world with better eyes, to see the world through the eyes of a compassionate Jesus Christ, and take notice of people in need.
You bet. Yeah. One thing they can do is to give us a call at 877-6967. Ask for our volunteer coordinator. Her name is Anna Littlehoop, and she will be glad to give them a tour, you know, of the ministry. We're on a 52-acre facility in the South Valley. Out of those 300-plus people staying on any given night, we have over 80 people, you know, kids, ranging from newborns to tots to toddlers to teens, and they just need all the help they can get. One way maybe M88 listeners can get involved is it won't be too long before it's time to back to school again. All the parents are breathing a sigh of relief. Maybe some of the M88 listeners can get involved in backpacks and getting the back-to-school stuff, the scissors and the tape and the glue and all that stuff. That would be wonderful. Maybe the station could do a drive or something of that nature. And also they can remember that they can pray for the homeless. And we always need, we need like what I call the non-sexy items. Can we say that word on
Absolutely.
On
M88?
Yeah, raw talk.
Yeah,
we need the non-sexy items. You know what? We need, you know, we need women's sanitary items. We need bleach. We need deodorant. We need basically everything. If you have a family of four, folks, we need everything it takes to run that family of four magnified about 75 times. Now, we also need TP, toilet paper, because you can't run a shelter without toilet paper. So we need all of that stuff. We need canned goods. Maybe somebody's saying, well, you know what? I can't go out to the grocery store and buy any, but maybe have a canned good or two in your kitchen. Well, maybe bring one or two down. We need used clothing. Basically, we don't need junk, because then we have to pay money to go to the dump to junk it. But folks, if there is a need that we have, or rather there is an ongoing need for all the basic items. So again, folks, deodorant, shampoo, combs, hairbrushes, lice shampoo. We had an outbreak of lice because if you sleep out on the street, you might get lice.
Mm-hmm.
Bleach, toilet paper, Pine Sol, cleanser. You know, all that stuff that guys like us don't think of. But, yeah, but you know, the women do to make sure we keep a clean place.
It's a good thing they're there to do that. And you know what? Even if people want to drop that stuff by here at the station, you know, we'll collect that and we'll get it to Jeremy and to Joy Junction as well. So.
Of course, I'm here every week on your sister station on KNKT.
Jeremy's here all the time, so he can come by and pick that stuff up. So if you want to just drop it by the studios, 4001 Osuna Road Northeast.
We also want to encourage you, if I can be very rude and interrupt, because people tell me I love doing that. If they really want to get like an in-depth look at me, and also maybe even think about starting a ministry for themselves, or maybe they have family in another part of the country where they think, well, it would be really great to have a ministry like that. Folks, you can go to homelessbook.com or a book called Homeless in the City, A Calls to Service, which gives all my ups and downs. I've had plenty of downs over the last 20 years, but the Lord has taken me up out of them with his help. And folks, that gives you the whole ins and outs of Jeremy Reynolds and Joy Junction.
And also joyjunction.org
yes.
If you want to visit the website. Now, is there do you have an email that you wouldn't mind sharing? If people have more questions for you, want to get in touch with you and talk with you more?
Absolutely. They can email our general email address at frontdesk, all lowercase, all one word, frontdesk@joyjunction.org, and our office staff will get that to me.
All right. Well, one of the verses that came to mind when I was getting ready for tonight's show came from Matthew 25. And a lot of people will be familiar with this. In verses 34 through 40, Jesus is telling a story, and he says, "Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me.' Then the righteous will answer, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?' And the king will answer them and say, 'Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me.'" And, we hear that verse so often. It's almost cliche. And we hear it like,
doesn't mean anything,
yeah,
does it?
I know that verse.
But yeah, whatever.
But you know what? If you take it as more than just a verse, and when you see people, you know, think of that. Like just the other day, walking out of Dunkin' Donuts, guy selling newspapers. I didn't need a newspaper, but obviously he needed
the money.
And he's selling newspapers.
And he's working.
He's working. So I even gave him more than the newspaper. You know, normally mm-hmm. you get out of the machine, gave him a donut. And, you know, that's not a big deal, but, I'm not trying to brag on myself or anything, but just the concept of seeing someone, and in my mind, it was a business transaction. You know, he's giving a newspaper, there might be something in that newspaper I might want to read. So why not?
Absolutely.
And then, even in college, I remember, and I was so embarrassed about this, in college, I was on my way to grab a lunch, and, I saw this guy, he was, you know, on the campus all the time and asking for money.
Yeah.
And he asked me, and I said, I'm going to McDonald's. Do you want something? And so he came with me, and, you know, I got him a lunch and set him up and said, hey, I'm really sorry. You know, I'm late for class. So I was just grabbing something to eat. So on and so forth. And then, I was walking, about a week later, and he was there again. And then he's like, hey,
Remembered.
Yeah, he remembered.
He remembered.
And he wasn't asking for more.
You touched his life.
Right. He didn't ask for more. He just came up and thanked me and gave me a hug, and I hugged him back. And the people I was walking with were like, do you know that guy? And I said, well, no, not really. I just bought him a hamburger over at McDonald's. But I'll always remember the fact that he didn't come back asking for more. He was just grateful.
You touched his life. You made an impact.
Right.
And that really is so important, folks. So you know what? Touch somebody. I mean, there's the old saying by the old AT&T, reach out and touch someone. Well, it was a corporate commercial slogan, but you know, we would do well as born-again Christians to say, reach out and touch someone with the love of Jesus.
Absolutely.
You know what? We don't go to church, even though there's a great church here, folks. Wherever you go, if you love the Lord Jesus Christ, you take the church with you, because you are the church, and you may be the only church, as the old saying goes, that somebody ever sees.
Well, that is a great note with which to end tonight's program. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I appreciate everyone who called in, made such great comments, and had good questions. I do have a show planned for next week. I just don't remember what it is. You know, with the 4th of July weekend, I've been on vacation mode for so long.
No, I have excuse, Seo, because I'm older than you. Is this like the age thing for you?
No, it might be. I know later this month we're going to talk about UFOs because they have the big 60th anniversary
in Roswell.
We're also going to talk about MySpace this week. Oh, yeah, I think MySpace is next week. We're going to talk MySpace and how you can protect your kids. We're also going to be talking about Harry Potter, because the new Harry Potter book will be coming out, and the movie's coming out as well. So there you go. That's what we got planned for the rest of this month. Jeremy Reynolds, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Again,
been great.
joyjunction.org if you want to learn more. And with that note, we're going to end tonight's program. Have a shway week in the Lord.